Great. I guess the winner in the pre-PLC call today is Alaska. It sounds like they're doing the best right now weather-wise, except for that 20 below. I don't know about that. Well, we're going to spend a few minutes today's call about partnership development, and it is really, really important, particularly this session. So, but before we get started, why don't we get any news if there's anything coming out of Washington? Heather?
Well, so far what I've heard from Washington is that they're kind of still indicating that we're looking at sort of that March-April timeline for RFPs coming out. So we'll keep you guys updated as if we hear anything a little bit more definitive from them. Of course, we'll pass them out to you guys either on the PLC or through the listserv. So just keep an ear out. But again, we're still, just from what they indicated to me this morning, we're still looking at that March, maybe April timeline for the RFPs coming out.
Okay.
And that would mean they were due, Heather, normally about, what, 60 days afterwards? Or
right. Yeah. 60 days. We in the post-session notes, it'll be redundant, but we'll always put that schedule in there. Basically, okay. If they go first part of April, May, June, they'd be due. July, August, they would announce the funded grants in August, early September, and then you have to do, once you get approval for being funded, you have to develop your work plans, as you know, and that takes about another month. So they're really, it's okay because the way the money is flowing, it's FY20 money, so they can't really start sending you checks until after October 1st. So that still works out okay. You'll get your money. You could start spending money in October, and then on that time plan, if you start planning, I don't know, some of you might do a first cohort before the end of the year, November, December. I think the objective would be at least to have one cohort through in the spring of next year, spring of 20. And that's in northern climates, of course, that's the power months for employing people. So for those of you who time it, and some of you probably don't have to worry about that scheduling, but that's kind of the schedule. So we're really looking to look at the fall. Hopefully we're going to have a lot more funds coming in. We'll see. They've been very quiet about how many they're going to fund. The thing that bothers me a little bit is they're everyone's eligible to apply. So that means that any of the second or third year grantees may submit proposals. But for those of you who have not submitted a proposal recently or looking to fund it, they have little loopholes. One is special conditions. If your area has special conditions, which we'll talk about in future calls, another one is they tend to give half to new grantees and about half to existing grantees. So depending on how much money, they give it all out, whatever they get. If they get $3 million, it's 15. If they get $6 million, they'll just, you know, times two. If they get $10 million, they'll have 50 grantees. So we just don't know, and they haven't said. And to be honest, they probably don't even know yet because they have to go around to other program offices and try to squeeze money out of them. So I'm sure it'll be at least $3 million. Hopefully it'll be a lot more. And that'll determine how many grants they give out. So we'll just have to see. I would say there'll probably be a little more competition than in the past. And it's going to be important to hit all the critical issues. And in fact, for HMTRI, what we're planning on doing from now till when it's due is really focusing on coaching not only prospective grantees who have never had a grant, but those of you who have had them. And it's like the Academy Awards or whatever. If you submitted in a year where you could have the best proposal out of the group, it's all graded on the curve. You might have squeaked in or got in with flying colors. If it's going to be a tough year, it might be a little more challenging. So we're really going to focus in not only in PLC calls, but we'll be doing a a webinar after EPA does theirs. Ours will be focused on things like landmines. Did you hit all the ranking criteria? Did you make sure you cross the T's, dot the I's? Did you include these very specific things that we know they look at? Did you not include things that they won't fund that might get you in trouble? So we're going to go through that. We've basically identified eight critical issues, and what we're doing in these PLC calls is we're going through, we first call them critical issues, and these are things that everyone needs to do to be successful that we've observed over the last 20 years to make their grant work. And usually when they haven't addressed one of these, there's usually problems one way or another. But within the way we're handling it, it was within each critical issue, we break it down into best practices. And we do have a document out called Best Practices, and that's up on the website. Heather, do you want to give the website address? And if anyone is not getting these calls or notes to these calls, just or if you know someone who wants to be on them, just send your information to Heather.
So absolutely. So if you wanted to check out the best practices, you can go to brownfields-toolbox.org. Again, that's brownfields-toolbox.org. And if you go to the Downloads tab, you will see that there is something that's called Brownfields Best Practices. That'll take you to a PDF copy of that document that Michael is talking about. And then also, if you did want to be added to any of the listservs or the PLC list or anything like that, you can always email me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
Best practices, that was written about a year ago, and they change. They change on your particular condition. They change on the economy, your particular demographic. So during these PLCs, we're going through these best practices that are associated with these critical issues. And if you've been on the other calls, and some of you haven't, we first addressed in the last two the community and the labor market assessment. And today we're going to do partnership development. The reason we're doing those first is they take a lot of time and they take a lot of effort, but they really form the foundation for the whole rest of the program. If either one of these is not done properly, it'll torpedo the program or at best give you a real difficult time once you get started. So as I go through this, you'll see why building partnerships takes a lot of time. Of course, to be redundant, the community and labor market assessments, those were basically trying to identify where you're going to put your program, which is critical. And to be redundant, but to just repeat it, you want to put those target communities in areas where there may be other things going on. There might be some brownfield development going on in that area. There may be other grants. There may be an enterprise zone or enterprise community. These are federal programs that you could refer to the notes in the last couple sessions. But these are federal programs. And the idea here is counterintuitive. You don't want to go somewhere no one else has gone. Really, you want to go where the other people have for the sake of writing this grant, because then you could partner with them. And then if they actually give you preferences to areas that are, well, a combination of underserved. There may be other programs that you can leverage with. There may be enterprise zones, which are being identified all over the country. And the best way to find those is get to the mayor's office, the county office, some governmental office that usually works with grants. We find that Office of Economic Development is always the best, or Office of Community Development, or the Deaner, who would be familiar, the DNR would be familiar with any brownfields activity that's in the area or any kind of project that's going on that's a big thing. And if there's I remember in the whole thing that started arts program in Cypress Mandela in Northern California was a bridge collapse, and that was the whole thing that got him going. They needed people. And that basically defined his target community, and from there he built up. Everyone isn't so lucky. They may have you probably have a gut feel of the section of the state that needs help, but it isn't always the underserved. You've got to make sure you don't have an employer desert. I call it, we all know about food deserts. I like to think of employer deserts where if you graduate people, they can't get to a job. There may be no transportation going to that area. They do deserve to have a program, but the question is can you deliver a successful program in that community if there's no employers, no transportation to get to the jobs, and they need help, and they need it badly, but the question is it an appropriate time for you to be doing this program in that community when it's absolutely devoid of other programs? So so having done that assessment and defining where you want to operate, the next thing is to start building partnerships. And those partnerships take a while to develop. And the question that everyone asked is, you're asking me to develop partnerships. I don't have the money yet. And not only do I not have the money, I haven't even written my proposal yet. And my answer is yes, that's exactly correct. And the way that these projects work is that you have to almost have your whole program laid out and your partners developed before you even get into the evaluation stage. And you'll see if you go to the last RFP, which is on our website from last year, and they don't change that much from year to year, you'll see that they're going to be asking all these questions. And if you haven't developed your partnerships, how do you sufficiently or comprehensively answer these questions? And the way you do this is always suggest to whoever you're working with that this contingent on you getting the federal funding. So whether you're working with employers, you're working with another nonprofit, or you're working with City Council, the Mayor's Office, Office of Economic Development, the way you want to approach it is, we are thinking of this job development program in the environmental arena. We would like your help. We don't know that we're going to get the grant. It's very competitive, but we feel this community can use it. We're looking and we're assessing where to put it. We're developing our program plan, and we need your help. And would you go along with it? They're not committing. They're committing if you get the money, but it's always the if. And this could be done with consultants, lining up your training providers. You might be a nonprofit, and you may not have in-house training capability in the courses you want to teach. So go out and start looking for training contractors. Again, you don't have the money. You haven't fully developed your schedule, but in the RFP, you're going to ask for training services, and it's expected to be in this area, be very vague, may change, maybe in this area, but it's contingent not only on if we get it, but it's also contingent on the schedule and the work plan, and that these things may change. Did someone have a question, or someone on speakerphone? Okay. If you have a speakerphone, try to be real quiet so I don't have to cut everyone off. We like to keep open mics if we can. But if you have a question, just blurt out. That's fine too. So, again, on your attitude in approaching all these partners is, this is contingent on us doing this. We want to do it. We're not sure we're going to do it, but we'll keep you informed. And if they're really excited about it, ask them to join in, because the plus 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 goes to those grants that are written not only with their partnerships established, but the partners actively involved in the writing of the grant. So you want to get them in as early as you can. That's why we're talking about it now, and it's a great time to talk about it. These three things that I've talked about, whether it's the community, labor market assessment, or building partnerships, not only they're hard to change once you get your proposal going too. So you want to spend your time, build this foundation. The rest of the critical issues we're going to be talking about are things that you can almost write at a later date. If you have these foundations, you can start talking about some of these other critical issues in a shorter period of time. But these just take a long time. And of course, it's a legitimate question. Why do I even need partners besides looking good on a grant proposal? Well, to be honest, these grants are $200,000 over 3 years. That's not likely to change. There are many disallowed costs. You're basically allowed to use federal money to do environmental remediation, health and safety in very specific areas. They don't even cover all programs, like air is not likely to be covered. There may be certain, and that'll come out in the RFP, what areas the EPA will cover. And you may be in a community where that's where the jobs are and you want to do some training in air or some other environmental area, but it's not funded by EPA. So there are some areas that aren't covered that are technical. There's also areas that are non-technical that they won't touch with federal money. And this is just the way the smokestack funds come down through Congress, through EPA. It's funded through the Office of Solid Waste, and they're going to favor their offices who are contributing money to this program. They will not fund life skills. They will not fund remedial education, rehabilitation services. They won't special caseworkers. They basically will cover the technical training, the startup, what it takes to start up. If you were to do a bare bones program that said, we're going to recruit people, we're going to train them in solid waste and hazardous materials and response, and we're going to place them. That's basically, this is a bare bones EPA-funded program. That's what they will fund. Now, unfortunately, when you look at programs and those that they will fund, the best grants cover a lot more than that. The best grantees are providing caseworker help, services, legal assistance. They're providing some rehabilitation services. When we look at some of the grantees started off in the social sphere, the social rehabilitation, drug rehabilitation. They started there, and then they added the environmental later. So they brought together a lot of the things that they had in-house, the rehabilitation services, the counseling, even shelter. Many of them had access to stipends. And then they brought the EPA environmental to add into that. So they almost did almost a reverse type of program. So this whole issue of disallowed costs, this is why probably the biggest reason why we're always talking about partnership development. Someone's got to do that, and someone's got to provide those services. Even recruitment and placement and testing, there's a big push on you've got to work with a WIB, a Workforce Investment Board, or a one-stop, some employment, one of the WIB funds in every state. But within a state, they subdivide them into your one-stops and your labor entities. You want to get close to those because they provide access to a whole lot of leverage services, whether it's recruitment, testing, might be drug testing, placement services. They open up their bridge to a whole lot of other services. So, of course, number one partner you want to seek out is the WIB, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. So you're basically bringing in additional expertise in the case of trainers by partnering. When I talk about partners, I'm talking about they might be contractors, they might be government officials, they might be community people who are informal leaders of the community. They might be in-kind partners. They may be companies, foundations. And foundations are important as well as large companies, because one of the things I haven't mentioned when we talk about why are partners necessary is sustainability. And the goal is not necessarily just to get this grant, although that's our near-term goal. Our longer-term goal is how do we become sustainable? How do we continue this? You know, our worst nightmare might be getting the $200,000. Then as we get into year two, we start thinking, well, what am I going to do in year four and five and six? And then this question of sustainability comes up. You could, fortunately, EPA allows everyone to re-up, and we've had people re-upping for 15, 16 years, or sometime dropping out and coming back and getting a grant. But the original people, when we were discussing starting this program long, long ago, the people at EPA said, well, we want to just give them startup money, and we expect that other agencies like labor departments, nonprofits, Goodwill, CDCs, they would pick up this program and integrate it into their program. And we pretty much talked EPA out of that. We suggested, well, not everyone can do that. We've got some outstanding programs that just don't have local resources. They're in a community where they don't have the resources to just take this program on with an annual appropriation. They can't write them into the budget. And we need to be able to allow people to re-up. And they said, that's fine. So they're doing that. So as I said, half maybe people who are re-upping, and then, but we want to, as one of the regional coordinators said, we don't want the same people going to the trough all the time. So we want to bring in new people who want to start new programs in new communities. And so they've kind of equalized this whole thing between new grantees or grantees that may have fallen aside and haven't been funded for a while, and they're coming back to the program. And then those who have been there for many years, like LA Conservation Corps, Art Shanks and Cypress Mendel, great programs, OAI in the Midwest. They're awesome programs, and it would be a shame to not give them consideration if they have a great proposal. So that's how they decided, okay, let's look at this in a way that everyone gets a fair shake. So we've got this combination of what partners bring to your program is more money, more services, things that they can do and do all the time and want to get credit for doing that you can't do. They could fill in those that training that is not allowed by EPA. They bring expertise and credentials that you could use in writing your grant. And this is why I'm saying you want to do this now on a contingency basis to get them in, because if you get partners that are committed to your program, you can write them into your grant. And some of the people, you might come across this question in the RFP, tell us about your experience in training in the environment. Well, you know, we don't do that. We're trying to break into this. We're a Goodwill operation, or we're a community organization or a community development organization. We don't have that. Well, if you develop a partnership with a community college, or you could write them into the grant. Well, we do. They've been doing environmental training for the last 20 years. We've got this set up. We're working with the WIB, who have committed to doing recruitment, assessment. They'll do all the assessment tests. They'll also help us with placement. They'll do a preliminary screening, which we'll supplement. So these are the partners you've got to get on board now. And again, as I emphasize, you want to get a commitment contingent on you getting the money. And but you want to get a commitment. And if there's a couple of kinds of partners that I just want to briefly talk about. There are sub-grantees, and those of you who have been to the all-grantee meeting know about this, but there's three areas. We've got sub-grantees, and then we've got contractors, and then we've got in-kind partners. And I just want to briefly, for those of you who may not be familiar with this program, the difference between those three. And all of them can be written in the grant with commitment letters, but you have to do this a certain way. If they're going to be a sub-grantee, you may develop, have a sub-grantee they have to be a nonprofit. They would have to have the same criteria for being qualified as you do. They're basically just like you, but they're kind of an appendage of you. So they would have to be, say, a nonprofit or a governmental organization. But you may have a sub-grantee of a governmental organization, or it might be a DNR, or you may be a sub-grantee of them, and they handle all the fiscal work, and they become the prime grantee, and they may sub-grantee with you, and you're a nonprofit that works with community organizations, and so you would become their sub-grantee. You would have to be a nonprofit. They would be the primary grantee, or it could work in reverse. A good example is Durham. City of Durham, they chose Durham Tech Community College to be a subgrantee, and they were written in the proposal. And Durham Tech had lots of training experience and connections and a lot of ability to recruit, train in place. So what's the drawback of a subgrantee? Well, the subgrantee is responsible. He's just like the grantee. He can be audited by the auditors. He has to do all of the things that the grantee, the prime grantee, does. And so, and this is only pertaining to people whenever there's money exchanging hands. I'll talk about in-kind later. But whenever there's money changing hands, if it's EPA money, that's fine. You don't have to get three bids. You don't have to. It's not a competitive bid. You could go to anyone, develop a subgrantee relationship. You don't have to do any pre-screening as long as they're a nonprofit and they're subject to and you're responsible for them. It's kind of like a little sister, a little brother who's going to help you along, but they're going to have to conform to everything. And that works just fine. And there's many grantees that have subgrantees. The second big area is fiscal. I call them fiscal grantees. This is where the money, they're not a subgrantee. Now, a subgrantee, the money could exchange hands, and that's fine. They're in a separate category. Now you've got fiscal, I call them fiscal grantee, fiscal contractors, basically. And these are usually trainers where money, EPA grant money, is going to be changing hands. And that's where they get snarky about it. If there's EPA money being used by someone who's not a subgrantee, they have rules and regulations that are different. They're basically just like acquiring a large piece of equipment or anything. If they're already on board to your organization, you're fine. If you're going to be, if they're new to your organization and you're going to hire them to do training, say HAZWOP or training, which is very common, you need to go out on bid and do a screening, three bids. You write a little RFP. And again, in this RFP, like everything else, we're planning on applying for this grant. We need training services. We'll talk about curriculum at a later date. These courses, it's contingent on our work plan. It's contingent on our schedule. And it's contingent on us getting funds. And you go out on the internet or any way you want. Doesn't have to be any massive approach, just three bids, document it, and have it in your files, and you're good to go. And that applies to primarily it's used for training purposes. Some of the certificates have to be administered by a certified trainer, and some don't, but others by consultants. And it's a very common practice that if you're not working with a community college or university that's a subgrantee, they go out for services. Now, what I would say is line them up now. And again, you're saying this sounds kind of crazy again. But again, you can go out for bid right now, tomorrow. You can call up a couple of consultants and say, this is contingent on this, this, and this, as I just said. And would you be interested in submitting a bid? Get those bids together. Get them on board now. Now, then you can include them in your proposal that you vetted them and they're on board and they're going to be doing the training. So you don't have a community college nearby. You don't have a nonprofit nearby that you could partner with for training. You are, say, a social services organization. You don't have that capability. You can go out and get your trainer lined up now on a contingency basis. And you can, when the question is, what training experience do you have? We're using ABC training. We've vetted them. They're experts in this field. They've trained 5,000 people, on and on and on. Now, if you don't do that, the alternative is, what is your training experience? Well, we're planning on going out and acquiring it. That's now, which of those would you choose if you were an evaluator? So get, again, if you can get your contractors on board, there aren't as many restrictions as you'd think. They have it's in the Federal Register, but basically contractors have some restrictions, but they it's basically good business practices, non-discriminatory, and everything that we're all aware of, that pretty intuitive. But you could do that now. The third one, which we all like, is in-kind. And in-kind partners, they don't ask for EPA money. They don't use EPA money. They're just benevolent benefactors. They're going to give you unconditionally whatever you need, or they're going to give you training. They're going to supply instructors, no charge. They might be another grantee. It may be an NIEHS grantee, and they're going to provide training. And there's a reason they might do that. They get credit for it, for training some of your people, and it's part of their mission statement. It might be, here's where the WIBs come in, the WIBs, the employment services. It might be a bank providing financial planning, financial literacy services. It might be an organization that's a social justice organization. They might provide life skills. It might be a YMCA, a Goodwill, all of those organizations, and there's many, many of them, which is another reason when we talked about finding out where to put this program. You want to put in a program where these benevolent benefactors operate. So they say, well, we're working in that area. We're providing lunches, or we'll provide stipends. You might find a company providing stipends. We out in California, bad press, PG&E, but they'll backstop an environmental program up in the northwest. We had two grantees. I don't know. Maybe LA does the same. They backstop provide offices for as part of their mission is to provide, in exchange for having monopoly, provide some community services. And some of those services might include backstopping and assisting the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training grantee. They might give them offices. They might give them all the administrative help they need. You might have benefactors who just have all they can do is give you money, which is fine. We have many foundations that we can't provide you with trainers. We can't provide you with anything, but we got money, and we're willing to give it to you, and that's awesome. It helps in terms of sustainability and support. There's some very it's hard to define what they give you. They give you access, and these are basically government officials, city council members. They're your friends. They're your secret protectors. They're people in government who will speak up for you or spread the word, and those are people on city council. It might be someone in one of the agencies that says, hey, we know this program, and they're trying to get a grant, and we need to help them. And they may end up providing you, a deaner may provide you with your trainer with fit-up gear or demonstration gear or the facilities or access to a test pad that you could use. So, and don't underestimate, we have found over the years, it's incredible how generous the private sector firms are and governmental agencies are. They're just incredibly become one a part of it. And a lot of them, it's part of their mission. And then others just want to help you because they want to get the program. And as far as employers, we've had employers who give equipment. They have different motives. They're looking for trained people. And you're giving them $5,000 worth of certifications, people who are screened, vetted, and certified. Their interests are your interests. And a lot of them are not only going to give you trainers who want to look at your people, guest speakers. Some may want to give you equipment because they're an equipment distributor or manufacturer. And that's more frequent than you would think. So there are lots and lots of potential in-kind partners. And they really don't have any obligation to anybody. If you've got one and you develop an MOU with them, you could put it in the grant. You just don't want to check off all these. You want to put them on as partners, but if they're a significant partner, you're going to want to get a memorandum of understanding, an MOU, that they're going to be contributed in a significant way. And you would want to, if you write them into the grant, that they're going to be providing trainers, for example, you would want to develop an MOU that they're going to provide you with 80 hours of HAZWOPR training because they've got certified trainers or something, you would want to have an MOU and put it in the grant. And if for some reason that changed, you would want to make that change aware, make your regional job development coordinator aware of that change. So that's part of it. So how do you find these people? A lot of networking, a lot of networking. And those of you who have been in the field longer than others probably have a little bit of advantage. Those of you who are closer to City Hall and governmental agencies probably have an advantage. If you don't, if you're not in the loop on what's happening in the government, and you're not in the loop of having worked with some of these agencies, what you do is have to go out and ask, tell them what you're doing, and you have to ask for references. Where can I go next? Where, if you go to Diener, is there someone that's working with brownfields? Are there what we call MAC or ART grants that are working on brownfields, whether it's assessment or cleanup? What companies are you dealing with? What companies are active in this area? All of those questions. If you're going into a community, it's absolutely necessary to work with the churches, the people who are the informal leaders of the community. You know, do you think that, and we talked about this in targeting your program, would the people you know or the people in your church or the people in your organization, are they interested in this? Are they adverse to being environmental remediation specialists? Would you think that they would embrace this, or do you think that they're not really interested in this? So you definitely, these are informal partners that you want to work with. So I know some of you out there, LA Conservation Corps and certainly Limitless Vistas, you all have partners. Are there some that you feel work best for you, or that you find to be pretty good contributors to your program?
Well, the city, sort of like the public works folks that we've had relationships with for the past, 30 years doing street services projects and stuff like that, have been like really solid support. We have a good relationship with the Economic Workforce Development Department. You know, their whole purpose is to get jobs, run summer youth employment programs, so our aims, what we do helps them out. Quite frankly, the worst partners that we have been the community colleges.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they should be like the people that help us get program participants into classes for certain kinds of training and certifications, any applied math or remedial language skills that they might need. And I'm looking over my shoulder to see if anybody's listening. I mean, we put them on the grants, mm-hmm. but day to day, we really don't work with them on this stuff. We pretty much end up doing a lot of things our own, or we have an associated charter school for high school completion, and they end up providing a lot of the educational support. Even those guys are squirrely too. I think it's just the nature of educational institutions where a lot of them are running programs in competition with ours.
True.
And
True.
They don't actually want to help us. They yeah. have their own tuition-driven career pathways programs. And, they don't see us as helping them, so they don't go out of their way to help us.
Right. They have their own problems with credit versus non-credit training.
Yeah.
And education versus training, and a lot of them don't want to leave campus. You have had tremendous success with the city. I've read many articles about working on the programs you just mentioned. It's incredible. I think it's a
yeah,
great...
Yeah, I mean, I know that the majority of the activities that we do, we provide a lot of services to the city that the city doesn't have the resources to do on their own. And so that sort of built up the relationships and the trust. And then when something comes along, like economic development or job training needs, then they look to us. So I have to admit we've been very fortunate there. You know, the part that we have to work for, though, is trying to get placements and working with the city's personnel department to say, can we do sort of like a first look hiring, or is there any kind of like fast track employment thing that we can develop together? I know that there were some meetings to have a sort of green infrastructure committee, which was personnel and public works and sanitation with us and several other job training providers in the area to see if there's a way that we could create a pipeline to the environmental services and street services jobs for our graduates. And the informal relationships are there, but they weren't able to come up with any sort of like formal structure for that.
Yeah. Do you have PG&E in your service area? Or, you know, the fellas in Northern California, they're getting lots out of the utilities, which people don't think of that, but they have,
yeah.
Because they have monopoly, they have to provide community services. And,
yeah, our area is either SoCal Edison or SoCal Gas or LADWP. We have a good relationship with LADWP. Nominally, we do have a sort of utilities track, but as far as I know, that has kind of gone cold, actually.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else find that a working relationship that really works for them? Sometimes. Go ahead.
This is Libby with Limitless Vistas. Our relationship with our Regional Planning Commission is really outstanding. They make sure that a lot of the contractors around town, if they want to get an extra point in on any of their RFPs, then they get a relationship with us. And if they have that, then they get a little bit of extra help on their own contracting and RFP work that they're doing. So that's a really great relationship that we have. But I also wanted to say that, you know, just like with LACC, our relationship with our community colleges is exactly the same as yours. They don't see the benefit of working, you know, closely with us, and so they don't, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge.
You've got to find your training probably through a consultant. Now, you've got a special program. Your founder, I mean, you've got an awesome program, and you almost went in reverse. You could tell, I don't know if you want to talk about your program or you want me to tell you how great you are. Your your founder had a private consulting firm, and he said, we need people. And he formed your organization. You have the ultimate partnership between private sector and environmental workforce development. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, well, he came into town. So our founder came to New Orleans after Katrina with a contract to do work, and he came without employees because he thought he would be able to find workers here in town. And, of course, very few of us were back in town for that, but the people that work here didn't have the experience or the training to do the work. And so yeah, it started there, and, you know, we've expanded from there, gone with the market, which is really the best way to do it. So yes, we do have really great relationships with those entities out there that might hire our employees. So but I think that our best relationship that we're talking about is the one with the Regional Planning Commission.
Yeah.
You know, we're you know, they are looking out for us, and we, you know, we're happy to go and work. And then that just means that, you know, any of the contractors in town, if they're working on a brownfield site, they can call us up, and we can bring our people out to, I don't know, help with the tank pull or to, you know, walk the site with them when they're doing a phase one or, some, you know, whatever the work is that they're doing. But but it gives us hands-on training that we would never be able to do outside of that relationship. So.
And, you know, well, Janet, you have a great program, and you're partnering with NIHS, and you all are synergistic, kind of helping each other, but you don't have to go out for training because you've got it all in-house in your case.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the niches that we provide in terms of our training is provided through our contract training program rather than the for-credit side. And that gives us a lot of flexibility that other, you know, the for-credit side cannot give. What I'm constantly working on and what I've been working on this week is we've had some significant political changes in our state, so all of my relationships before are out the window. Now I'm spending this time getting new ones, and it's real and that's a tough part, you know, is our new incoming Secretary of Workforce Development has said it's all about job training programs, and so that's what I'm doing. I would also add another niche that we're providing is many of the people in these for-credit programs are not coming out with the certifications they need to get jobs.
Wow, that's
so significant. It's significant. So someone comes out with a four-year degree in environmental science, but they do not have their HAZWOPR or their DOT or their RCRA certifications, because certifications are not part of the for-credit side. So that's a niche that I can provide because through my contract side, we do the certifications.
Right. You know,
can I add something to that? One of the things that we come, this is Buddy from New Bedford, we're also trying to get a relationship with the local community colleges here in the new grant round, but also the certificates, we also try to include de-leading and asbestos, particularly here in the Northeast because of the old housing
right.
and all that kind of good stuff. And so that's and it's a hard sell to get them to say, hey, why not give them that as well? Because that makes them employable.
Yeah.
It puts extra tools in their wallets as far as having all of these certificates so they're more competitive and more employable.
Well, what Jan is saying, and some of the other people may want to consider this if you haven't worked with community colleges, go to business and industry. Don't go to for credit. In other words, the way community colleges are set up is they've got the people who want to stay on campus, which are you got the deans and the for credit and that whole political infrastructure. And then you've got the business and industry, which are separate. And in some colleges, there's a big class distinction between them. They may be hiring trainers who have been in business for a long time. And if there's enough demand, they'll put on training. But they're not part of the political environment. So if you go toward it, and we found also the worst place to go to universities because they don't want to leave their classroom.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're making some generalizations here that it's always dangerous. But if you go to business and industry, you want to go for the true community college, the guy that's been doing it for 20 years. He's maybe employed as an adjunct by the community college to do just that kind of training that fits their needs. And so if you go to the wrong place, you're going to get snubbed. But if you go to that other one, you might have a little better luck. Would you all confirm that pretty much?
I would go with that. You know, and we've got a little issue here in New Mexico where I don't know if you've paid attention to the news, but we've got a $1.4 billion cleanup going on. And they're having trouble finding people, and I'm standing there going, us.
We're here.
But right now, the contract was awarded to Texas A&M, and so Texas A&M is bringing in people from Texas. And so we have some other things we're having to deal with right at the moment. So
I hate to say something bad about a school. We had Texas A&M. Was a grantee early on, 20 years ago maybe, and they lasted one cycle. That was it. Didn't work. Just didn't work. They didn't want to leave campus. Now maybe they've changed. Hopefully
they're exporting the whole dang thing right now. It looks like.
Okay. Well, that's about right. That's about right. That is a problem. Again, go to business and industry or non credit. It sounds funny because you want to go for for doing certs and credits, but it's a non-credit program. Now, after we've trolled all these colleges, they're not all like that. But
no.
Some are. Go to banks. Big corporations are great for in-kind banks, utilities. One place we haven't mentioned, well, we're going to be talking about this in a different, we're talking about partnering. We're going to be talking about leveraging. Next time, actually, go to Attorney General's office. So, we're way over. I'm sorry about that. But the discussion started to get good when you all started to contribute. So, well, why don't we continue this discussion next time, and we'll be talking about leveraging. And if you have any questions in between now and then, just email something to Heather, and we'll be sending out post-session notes on Friday. If for some reason anyone doesn't get them, just send your contact information to Heather, because we've got two lists. One's larger than the other. Post-session notes always go out to the PLC list. So, well, with that, why don't you all have a good week, and hopefully the weather will improve for all of us.
Thank you
very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.